Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Recording. See if I can remember how to do this. It's been a whole week.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Native Heath here. It's been a little while since I've done a Dumpty Dum, and I thought I should try and make amends. And the other day I was rooting around in my stationery drawer, and I came across a little box.
No. Damn it. Where is it? Ah.
Here it is. And the little box has a little handle on it, and I, out of curiosity, I turned the handle, and this is what happened. And I'm afraid that's all you get.
Oh, marvellous. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the prize-winning ram about to bring home the bacon that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the dodgy lamb kebab that's about to bring on a case of the trots that is...
Andrew Horn.
And the last part of Ambridge's Sheep Dippers Night Out, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum is again from Native Heath. We thought it was so good that you want to hear it once more. Andrew, if someone wants to send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek tells me his wife has joined a book club this week. Apparently they're reading 50 Shades of Grey. Mm. And now he's expecting her to be tied up for the next month.
On this week's episode, we hear views from Steve, young Keith again, Claire from Hawaii, taking the piss now, aren't they? James, Witherspoon, and a mystery person from Melbourne who didn't give their name. But before we crack on, if you fancy a bit of a northeast knees up, and you know, who doesn't, why not head to the Dumpty Dum meetup on Friday the 19th? That's this Friday at 7 p.m. at the Tyneside Bar Cafe in Newcastle. It's organised by Dumpty Dummers Jane and Mia. Everyone's welcome. Further details from the Facebook group Ambridge on Tyne, or Ambridge upon Tyne, I beg your pardon. Or tweet Mia at Fox on a Ledge. That's Mia at Fox on a Ledge. But first, before the calls, let's brace ourselves for Andrew Horn's Ambridge Roundup.
We start with Sunday, the one where Jim owns it. A lot of passing conversations around the village today. There was the Tom and Adam catch-up where Tom told Adam he was entering Piggy's crazy competition. And Adam explained why the harvest was 200% easier this year without the pickers. Finding them, accommodating them, humouring them, not to mention saving his energy taking them up the polytunnels. Eddie meets Nakasha at the cricket after a tip-off from Clary and engineers a meeting via a convoluted makeover plotline. You just know we have a classic Eddie scheme brewing. But the emotional heart of the episode remains Greenacres. Jim starts the day in chipper mood, dispensing fun facts about bacon, and ends it having a lovely discussion reminiscing about his wife with Alistair. He reflects how he feels settled for the first time since she died. He needs to put this unfortunate upset behind me. He apologized to people. I have no power to change the past, but I can choose how I face the future, make amends with my neighbours and get on with my life. It was powerful and pragmatic, and who's to say that he's wrong? Big respect, Monday, the one about crazy capers and Piggy's revenge. Two lighter plot lines today, with plenty of opportunity for the comedy script writers. Nakasha turns up at Grange Farm for Clary's makeover, and Eddie asks, "Do you do men?" To which the answer should have been, "No. Tom may be 38, but he's still a boy." Props to her, though, as she stays and gets Eddie sorted with a facial, whilst he wangles himself the role of consultant for their bid. An over-engineered plot setup, but light-hearted fun. Especially as Tom wets himself when he hears about it, and we leave him explaining to Nakasha the scams of Eddie Grundy. Most of the episode was at the Dower House, with Lillian getting ready for, then overindulging at, her birthday party. Her great idea was to exclude all her family, which is difficult when they live in the same village. This is the second week where Lillian is written out of character, in my view. Sure enough, midway through the evening, Piggy gate crashes, getting her own back for Lillian gate crashing her meeting the other week. And then, to add insult to injury, steamrollers the inebriated Lils into taking on the role of trust administrator. Game, set and match, Pigoy. Tuesday, the one about hangovers, apologies and princess punch-ups. Back at Greenacres, Jazza is hungover after celebrating surviving day one working for Adam. Jim is happy that everyone is accepting his apologies, but Jazza thinks apologising is a sign of weakness and he shouldn't bother. A coffee for Jim in the Bull with hungover Lillian, who also advises never apologise, never explain. And we move to Home Farm, where Adam, Jazza and the useless Rory are literally taking up the polytunnels so that the cherries don't pop due to over-ripening and the delayed arrival of the pickers. Alice steams in, chasing the data promised for her pitch. She moans on and on. "Nothing so stressful in my life, the scariest thing in my life." And Jazza finally blows up. "It's just a job. It's not scary. The real problems are kids out there being abused. This is just an attack of the nerves and self-indulgent." Adam gets all high and mighty and insists on an apology, and Jazza refuses. So we are left wondering, will Jazz survive day two in his job? Wednesday, the one about talking to trees. This complaining about your job is infectious. Alice has passed it on to Krusty, who's complaining to Clary about privileged clients at the health club. Clary is more concerned about not setting off Chippy Emma, when she should really be worried about Papi, who is soon to be traumatised by the farmer collecting Peppa Pig. Susan, in a good impression of an undertaker, reminds Shula that it's 2 years since Caroline died. It turns out that Alice's presentation went well, though Susan's outrage at Jazza's behaviour is given short shrift by Emma, who agrees with Jazza that she's a princess. Shula and Krusty have a heart-to-heart by Caroline's tree. I have to admit I warmed to Shula when she was talking about Caroline. She also showed self-awareness, describing herself as just a nosy, interfering, self-opinionated old bat. But Krusty had been taking her politeness tablets and responded that she thinks Shula is wise. Thursday is the one about siblings. We have a Will and Ed usual arc of Will tearing into Ed, Ed apologising, then them all calming down and having coffee. Will makes the observation that Ed is only driven by money, hence the working for Timotei. Will's worried, not for Ed, but in case Bev uses any criminal fallout as an excuse to take Papi away. So Ed lies and says it's all over, a surefire sign this is about to blow up all over again. Toby takes Rex on a birthday surprise date, and they have a wonderful picnic with Rosie. This was designed to trigger memories for us of all childhood picnics in glorious weather. Not the usual events where children spill food and sticky drinks and a plague of wasps descend, causing chaos. Here, all is calm and wonderful. The day is marked by Rosie taking her first steps. Mark my words, Pip will no doubt flagellate herself about missing this milestone in an episode soon, so expect incoming whinging. The final sibling was the arrival of Fiona, fed up with Alistair ghosting her. Unfortunately, her appearance spooked Jim, who dashed off to deadhead his roses. he goes on that it was an act of self-pity for him to burden Alistair and Jazz. He feels he's a weak man, deeply ashamed, and that he lacked the moral courage to keep the sorry business to himself and take it to the grave. And finally, Friday, the one about horses' bits and buckets. Ian wakes Adam. "No, I didn't," he exclaims in his sleep, but Ian misses the opportunity to pry into Adam's guilty conscience. Instead, he turns up later with a souffle for breakfast. Adam reminds me of Marvin, the paranoid android in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He is so negative. Ian does his best to cheer him up with talk of their next bucket challenge. A night out in the gay village in Birmingham with the youngsters, and they plan their dad dancing. Meanwhile, Fiona and Alistair have a cosy chat, where Fiona finally accepts that Alistair is under oath to Jim not to spill the beans. They nip over to the stables to deliver a horse. Alistair obviously wants to get Fiona away from Shula pronto and head off for breakfast, so he isn't thorough in assessing the placenta. Maybe he was salivating over black pudding with scrambled eggs at the tea room. Luckily, Jacob the Wonder Vet spots this and equine death is averted. Shula finds a new angle for her probing, focusing on the effect the situation is obviously having on Alistair, as he wouldn't usually make this sort of mistake. She's worked out why Jim is upset, so Al opens up to her about his worries that if Jim tries to put a lid on it without resolving the issues, it will come back worse. So we end the week with no big resolution, just the more promise of more to come next week. The end.
Thank you very much, Andrew. A few corkers in there as well that Lucy would be proud of.
Absolute well, tough. Yes. At least he didn't ramble on so much this time. I got a headmaster's note this morning. Yes, I did. Yes, little bit of a word to the wise. You know, try and keep it under 5 minutes.
All right. Good luck. Oh well, we did our best.
We did our best.
Well, I wonder if we'll be lining up outside the office next week for a thwacking.
Yes.
Listen, what I like about these roundups and the ones that Lucy does is it reminds me of what I've forgotten, if you know what I mean. And one of the weirdest things this week that leapt out at me and said, "Hey, what's going on there?" was the way that Ian woke Adam up, which seemed to be with a teaspoon on a glass.
Yes.
It was like this. I'm going to do my own spot effects now. It was like, Adam. I mean, you give him a good old shove, don't you? I'm sure it's not the only rude awakening Adam's had in his time.
I know. And then the way he just woke up and went, no, I didn't. And if we were nearer Christmas and Panto season, we could all just say, oh, yes, you did. Because we do know he has.
Oh, yes. Frequently.
Indeed. But Ian just didn't do that. I decided in the roundup to leave all the souffle competition because people will get fed up with that over the coming weeks.
Oh gosh, yes,
that's going to be star of the fete.
How do you cook a souffle in at a fete? I mean, it's quite tricky. You've got to have a kind of a windless atmosphere, haven't you? I mean, one slight puff of wind and it could be deflated and all end in tears.
I thought the key was not to open the oven until just the right moment. If you open it too early, it deflates. So yes, again, are they going to have ovens at the fete? I don't think it's been thought through.
Yeah, I mean, you would need two ovens, and where are you going to get a spare oven from? Are you going to wrench one out of one of the houses on the green to bring along?
I have to say, have you been listening to the current series of Dead Ringers?
I have, Friday, yes.
I could think of was they talked about it, and Hugh was the Michel Barnier chap who talking to Hugh Edwards.
So it's Hugh.
Yes.
Do you think we'll ever hear from Hugh? We haven't heard Hugh before, have we?
He's a silent, but he's been around for a while. Yes, at the Lower Locks, he's the chef over there.
Okay.
But you wouldn't think the chef there would be in the same league as Ian. So I don't know why he's worrying.
Well, I don't know. He's obviously got the souffle knack more than Ian. Who knows? Who knows? The other nice thing was to see Toby and Rex return. Now, I've kind of grown fond of Toby, I have to say.
Yeah, At first I didn't realise it was him setting up for the party. And I wondered, hang on a second, have we got a new Toby? And then maybe it just took him half a scene to get back into his Toby voice. But yes, I've missed, I thought it was a lovely day out that they had together, and that scene with the, you know, oh yes, I've almost forgotten the blindfold, and the way he looked after Rex, and the whole thing with the wedding, which had obviously knocked Rex's day, finding out that she's only just gone up north and is going to go and get married, or off to the east.
Up north, she got to Newmarket.
She got to Newmarket. That's right. Her parents, her family comes. She'd been in Glasgow before, hadn't she? When they were,
yeah.
But she went off to Newmarket, and that she's
and someone else. On Twitter was saying, because it's she's been left, what, about a year now?
Is it that long?
I don't know. Maybe about a year. Someone out there will tell us exactly when she's left. Cosmo. Maybe Cosmo will be able to tell us. sorry, I have to clear the old throat there. But someone on Twitter was saying they really hoped it isn't an arranged marriage because, you know, of her background and it happening so quickly. But I can't imagine that happening. Can you? I don't know.
No.
It's a thought, but...
No, I don't think so at all. I think she was always so forthright. When she knew what she wanted, she went after it. So she's obviously found someone that she thinks is marriage material and has just charged off and done it.
Found another doormat to walk all over. That's not to say that all arranged marriages are bad. I mean, gosh, I mean, if anyone would like to arrange a marriage for me...
Are you open to offers then?
Well, I think everyone should be open to offers. It depends, you know, what's being put on the table. The size of the offer is what counts here, Andrew. Shula, yes. Now, Shula has been creeping her way into my sympathies, I have to say.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned that last week, and I still find it extremely unnerving to find her there, lurking.
Yeah. She had a better week. I wasn't sure with... it was left ambiguous. She went charging after Jazza to try and find out about Jim, but it was left ambiguous as to whether she rushed out because she'd been reminded about Caroline's death and whether she'd actually remembered or not. I thought that was left nicely ambiguous. I thought it was lovely to have Krusty back, although she's obviously... wants something to do with her life and missing the job satisfaction and has this interview coming up. The only thing that worries me is that it does then make her financially dependent on Philip. He's quite happy for it, but whether she will end up feeling trapped, I don't know, I suppose. We'll just have to keep listening to find out.
And we had a similar story maybe last year or the year before between Harrison and Fallon, because Fallon was worried about not being able to contribute to the purchase of Honeysuckle Cottage, not Woodbine Cottage.
Yes.
But, you know.
And also didn't want to marry him because she couldn't contribute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... As I said, I'm open to offers with anyone who's got a nice Oxford property, 3 bedrooms plus. You know, I'm not that fussy about looks. The house has got to look nice, but you can be below average, quite frankly. Lillian's party. I'd quite like to have been at Lillian's party, wouldn't you?
Yes. I mean, apart from the craziness of, you know, she would have invited her. She would have invited. Well, I think that Piggy played a blinder. But she would have invited. She would have invited her family. I mean, Tony was glad not to have to go, which is fine. And what was the other thing I thought was a bit strange? Oh, it was the following day when she was talking about, oh, I need to sit and put my trotters up. This seems to be something that's not a Lillian phrase, and it's something that's been sweeping the BBC ever since the chap who plays in EastEnders, the landlord, and his rant at Cameron sticking his trotters up. On the French Riviera last year. That trotters up phrase keeps popping up. They're now using it. His character is now saying it quite regularly in EastEnders, and we've now got it coming across to the Archers.
That's where Lillian's picked it up. She's an avid EastEnders viewer. Didn't you know?
Yeah, well, maybe she is.
Yeah. Now, we could talk about Jazza and Alice, but I think we have a call bit later
Let's
on.
Let's get into the calls.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First call is a mysterious Melbourne person who didn't leave their name.
In the excitement calling.
Exactly.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. First time caller, long time listener. Not as long as some, though. I've probably been listening. I'm just trying to work out what was happening when I first started listening. I remember Jazza was being contacted. My first episode was Jazza was receiving unwanted texts from a woman who was pursuing him, and he was ignoring her texts. I remember that being the first ever thing I listened to, and I was came to the Archers when I was living in England about 11 years ago. So I'm 39 years old. I live in Melbourne, Australia, and I'm a transgender person, non-binary. And I was what inspired me to call in today was that it's been such a pleasant surprise to find this podcast. I'm such an avid Archers fan and have been, as I said, for 11 years. And I had always assumed that all the listeners of Archers were very conservative people, and that I would have nothing in common with the people that listened to it, and that I would be sort of an outlier as far as listeners went. But having listened to the people who've called in, having heard Nigel talking about having a pride meetup in New York of Dumpty Dum listeners, I was like, wow, this is a community I hadn't realised that I would have so much in common with. And also not just people who are part of the LGBTI community, but other callers where I've been like, oh, wow, I love what you have to say. And so it's just been such a pleasant revelation, because this has been such a something I have done very solitary. And I've never been able to meet anyone who also listens to Archers living in Melbourne, Australia, except for my mum, who was a listener.
Well, thank you very much, mystery Melbourne person.
Mm.
It's so nice to hear that, isn't it?
It is. And now we have another friend for Millie Bell.
We do. But, well, our mystery person in Melbourne is so used to doing it in secret, so to speak, that, you know, maybe they want to keep it that way. Who knows?
Maybe.
It took me a long time to admit to people that I listened to the Archers.
I suppose I've always just grown up with it, listened to it.
See,
when I
haven't.
At school, I did used to listen with headphones on when I was at school rather than playing it out loud.
Did you go to a boarding school, or did you? So you were sitting in your dorm and you're listening on headphones.
I listened from when I was 13. Yeah, so when I went to my senior school.
I am a late starter in many, many things. I've got an awful lot of catching up to do. Well, thank you, mystery Melbourne person.
And I think we're not being rude, just point out in cutting you off. It says there's a 2-minute limit and it just stops.
Yeah, they knew
but
that.
But do in call fact, in.
I did edit a little bit and there was like 1 second that came after that. And he said it made much more sense to say, oh, and my mum listened, and then I jump in at the end. And there was a couple of bits that I edited to squeeze that together, but it was the most important bit was that, you know, and I don't really, sometimes I cut off the praise at the end. You know, I redact the praise, so to speak, at the end of calls, because it feels a bit, I don't know, I don't mind having my trumpet blown from time to time, but not every call. But please don't stop saying you like the show, but you know what I mean? But I just thought that was such a nice bit of praise that we just had to get that in at the beginning.
It's lovely that it is about the Dumpty Dum community. Yeah, we've seen it before. We saw it the first time I was really aware of it was Emily in Paris when the terror attacks were there, and all the support that she had on Twitter, and then she called in about it. And there have been several since when caller innerers are in a bad space and everyone rallies around them. So I think it is brilliant.
Yeah, we good work. It's you guys out there that do that, not us. We just sit here rabbiting on. Shall we hear from Young Keith?
Yes.
I think he's got a plot prediction.
Hello, Young Keith here once more. I'm just calling with a brief plot prediction based on Miss Piggy and her reaction to Emma's sort of nasty little comments, I suppose you would say, about it being a closed competition just for the archers. And I wonder if she did strike a chord there. And I wonder when Ed does finally get sent to prison, which I'm sure will happen because I'm sure they'll find that stuff, whatever it is, in his barn before it gets cleared out. And I'm sure it'll be taken. I wonder if Piggy will change her thinking and invest her money, in fact, in getting the Grundys free, paying the legal costs and bail, etc. Call me mad, but I could see that happening. Anyway, all the best. Been very much enjoying the show lately, so thank you very much.
I think he just means last week was really good. Well, thanks for your compliments, but I think you're talking absolute balderdash, Young Keith. I mean, Ed's not going to go to prison, is he? He can't go to prison. We can't have another Ambridge jailbird.
Last week, I think I agree. I don't think that Peggy would put money their way to help fight legal bills. I could see her taking pity on Emma and trying to put more work her way. I don't think I haven't changed my view since we talked about it last week about where we sort of came to an agreement. I think that it'll be a shot across their relationship bows and might cause them some difficulties, but it won't end up with him going to prison.
No. The other intriguing part of that call is, why was he calling live from the on-ramp to the M1 at Watford? Maybe you didn't hear that, but there was an awful lot of traffic noise.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting where people choose to do their caller in a ring.
Very maybe he was suddenly responding to Royfield's request for some more calls. I just thought, I have to get it in now.
Maybe. I would like to make a plea for people to send their calls from the most interesting and unusual places from around the world. Okay.
And is that a link to an exotic location coming up next?
Kind of. Although, I'll let you be the judge of that. Here's Steve.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Steve, originally from Southampton, but now Cincinnati, Ohio, USA. On the twatters, I'm Moldy Old Doe. I've been a long time listener. And this is an attempt at first-time caller innering. Timeline-wise, I could claim to be David Archer. My dear late mum used to bounce me on her knee while listening to the Archers coming from our Rediffusion rental radio in the kitchen in the late 50s and early 60s. But more realistically, I think I am Freddie and Lily. Due to a burst of midlife crisis-esque nostalgia in 1999, when I started downloading probably dodgy illegal streams of the show, this was an attempt to try and stop myself from being homesick. I really began enjoying the storylines and gentleness of the programme. Being able to obtain them as easily as I do now warms the very heart of my cockles, and it always forms part of the soundtrack to my regular early morning constitutional around Cincinnati and its beautiful riverfront. This is my mouldy old plot prediction. I think the Gills will turn out to be the criminal masterminds that have Tim and Ed under their cosh. Ooh. I think that Home Farm was bought with laundered cash and has been the Gills' centre of operations while they've been doing their dirty work in and around Ambridge. When they move on to another area, they will either abandon it, leaving it in a disgraceful and unkempt condition, or they will burn it to the ground to hide any evidence. Either way, Jennifer's beautiful kitchen will be no more, leading her to drink or possibly heroin.
Oh.
Anyway, that's mouldy old me for now. Catch you all again later. Bye.
I think the kitchen's already been ripped out.
Has it?
Yeah, they talked about it
being in the backyard or something.
Yeah, and not being in good taste.
Oh, but I certainly hope part of that is going to come true.
Which part? Oh. Jenny on heroin?
No. Oh gosh, no. Mm. Oh, I wouldn't wish that on Jennifer. I mean, can you imagine her going cold turkey? She wouldn't have cold turkey in the house, would she?
Only on Boxing Day.
Well, quite perhaps. No, she's definitely a goose woman, isn't she?
Ooh.
For Christmas.
I did have the context.
Sorry.
I don't know.
No, I quite like that idea that they're criminal masterminds, and then they'll burn the house down to hide the evidence. Oh, I'm getting a little too overexcited about this idea. You can tell I didn't listen to the whole call, can't you, the first time around when I was doing all the editing and patching. Yeah. So it's quite a long call. I thought, oh, he sounds all right. He sounds like he's not going to make any ums and ahs or do anything silly in the middle. So I'll trust Steve. But certainly caught me out there, didn't you, Mr. Cincinnati, Ohio? Goodness me. Now, speaking of glamorous, far-flung locations, we go even farther west in the United States to Hawaii. Have you got your grass skirt on?
I might have.
Okay, well, I can hear a faint rustling in the background. I wonder what that is. Here's Claire.
Aloha, Dumpty Dum Ohana. This is Claire from Hawaii. I'm just following on from the conversation that Robert and Lucy were having maybe two Dumpty Dums ago with regard to the child actors. Yes, their voices are incredibly unrealistic. Henry's about 2 months older than my eldest son, and my eldest son is like way more eloquent than Henry. Anyway, maybe part of the explanation is that I vaguely recall an interview with Louisa, who plays Helen, and she was describing how the child actors and the adult actors do not record their lines together. There's some kind of bizarre rule where they have to do it separately. So she was describing how hard it was to, you know, be talking to Henry when he's not actually there. So that may be part of the reason as well. But I mean, I agree, they need to get child actors who are the same age as their characters, because they just do sound really childish, for want of a better word. It's like they go from being really childish to like suddenly all grown up. Anyway, there's my tuppence for today. Hope everybody's well. And yeah, that's it really. Bye for now.
Thanks, Claire. And what a lovely tuppence it was. Mm. I think that my take on that is I don't think it's the actors, the adult, fully-fledged trained actors that have a problem responding to a character that's not there, because I mean, that's part of the training, isn't it? You see that happens so much in films these days. I think it's the isolated reciting of the lines by the children out of context that sounds really weird when it's dropped in.
Mm. So do you think it would be easier for the children if they were there and actually having a conversation? Because presumably all the children are doing are recording individual lines into a void, which must be really hard for them.
Whereas you could, they must be doing it to, or acting to another person in the studio, surely. But I think it's because it's such an odd situation to be in a radio studio. There's nothing to take your cues from. It's probably a long and laborious process for children, so there's not that excitement of being on stage. And they probably are just given a list of things to say. Okay, Mummy, all right. Mm. Sorry, Mummy.
I think the fact...
Why don't you shaggy anymore, Mummy? Things like that.
Have you been listening in advance to next week's storylines?
No, I was paid a day fee to go and record Henry up in Birmingham at the mailbox.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's, well, I think, like I said, the adult actors, fine. But it's the kids, it must be quite tricky for them. There might be a better way around it. I don't know. I'm sure that the powers that be, the producerettes, et cetera, will be thinking on our choice words about that, definitely. Let's hear from James now. He has, I've got a reaction to what James says, which you'll find out about in a moment.
Hello, everybody. James here. This week I actually listened to the Omnibus episode. I listened to it on Sunday evening rather than the usual kind of nightly episode. And what it really showed to me is that an hour and a half of the Grundy family is way too much. I realised why I can only do it in 13-minute bursts. Emma moaning on about how everybody's entitled and privileged is dull. Poppy, I know she's a child, but let's be honest, this is a sheep. There are lots of sheep in Ambridge. Feel free to go and find another one. Will moaning on about the way other people are parenting his kid that he can't look after himself is incredibly ironic. And Jazza and Jim. I know that Jim's storyline is horrific. Everybody is aware of that. Everybody accepts that. But the way that Jazza spoke to Alice is completely unacceptable. If we're being honest, yes. Compared to what Jim went through, Alice's experience of a stressful day at work seems inconsequential. But A, Jim is not broadcasting what happened around the village, so she's not going to know that. And B, everybody has their own issues in life. That shouldn't invalidate it. It's like, if I have a difficult day at work, well, yeah, it doesn't matter because somebody somewhere in the world is going without food tonight. There may be a first world problem, but it is still a problem. Anyway, speak soon. Bye.
James, I agree almost 100% with what you said there about everyone's problems being their own problems. But I don't know how you can't agree that Alice 100% deserved that tongue-lashing that Jazza gave her. Don't you agree, Andrew?
I think Alice, if someone had sat Alice down when she was growing up and stopped her being a spoiled princess, then yes, she does. She has lost all sort of grip on reality, really. But where I do agree that it was wrong was, I think, if Jazza had done it in the pub, then, but he did it in the workplace, in his workplace. So I can see why Adam then asked him to apologize, because it's in the workspace and he has a sort of duty of care to anyone there, even though Alice isn't an employee. But I thought it was inappropriate there, but that just shows it's Jazza's instinctive reaction and just shows how much he's bottling it up and the effect that the whole storyline is having on him. So I think a lot of it was really to get over the effect it's having on Jazza as much as Alice being her usual drama queen.
Yeah, Jazza does seem to be a man on the brink, so to speak, yeah. I think.
And I think looking ahead, I wanted to re-listen to some shows, so I went on to Sounds and just put in The Archers. And it's brought up a load of shows for over the next couple of weeks, at least the titles of them, which is bizarre. Mm-hmm. And it looks like this is going to the Jazza coping or not coping is going to be something that keeps coming back for a while.
Okay.
But then we had, we've had one email in this week. Shall I just put it in here? Because this shows, this is a different reaction to Jazza's speech. It's from Kitty Prickett, subject Jazza speech. Just listened to Tuesday's episode and Jazza gave the best speech I've ever heard. It was so heartening, especially to the pretentious irritant that is Alice. So then Adam's response of trying to make him apologise made me actually dislike Adam rather than the usual bored indifference. Go on, Jazza. My prediction is it inspires Alice to quit her job and become a fully fledged booze hound. Loads of love, Kitty.
That poor, goodness me, it seems like we're wishing that entire family to go down the drug addiction and abuse line. I mean, come on.
I think there's something still, an unresolved plot line with Alice's work in terms of why she's always feeling that her boss is going to sack her why she doesn't have any sort of sense of that she's adding value. She's obviously no sense of worth in her work, and yet we hear that, you know, the presentation went really well, she got some great feedback, but she's very insecure about her work, where she's not insecure about anything else in her life. And that's something that's come back a few times over the last year or so, but we don't know why. We don't know whether, I think at one stage we thought she was being bullied at work or that she was having an affair with someone at work or something, you know, all sorts of stories going around, but we don't know what it is, but there is something at Price Bowman that isn't, not making it a happy place for Alice.
No. Maybe she just has imposter syndrome, but it could be that it's quite a toxic environment. You know, especially it would seem that it would be a male heavy work environment, and some blokes think banter is a different thing than women do, if you see what I mean. So it could be that, I don't know, but yes, you're right that she seems to be very confident in every aspect of her life except work. I hadn't thought of it that way before. Now, we did forget to read out a missive regarding the legal implications of of Piggy's environmental competition.
Yeah, so after last week, I saw something on Twitter with Auntie Annie. And it looked like she was expressing had some professional knowledge. So I actually asked her if she would give us her thoughts on Piggy's trust escapade. So she has indeed sent us this. Hello, I'm Annabelle, Auntie Annie on the Twitters. Very long time listener. For a long time, I thought I was a Graham who was a chef, but Royfield thinks I imagined that. So I will have to revisit my Archer's provenance. As a trust lawyer, I just can't understand what exactly Piggy has been advised to do. Without wishing to bore my fellow Dumpty Dummers to death, there's an answer to creating a purpose trust that is complex and expensive. My concerns are the restrictive pool of potential recipients and the prize itself. The administration costs and tax consequences are likely to be disproportionate to what she is giving away in this case. Normally, trusts and foundations doing this sort of thing have millions to give away, and of course are giving to genuine charitable purposes. Clearly not the case here. Piggy would be much better off investing properly in one or all of the family businesses. There are some more obvious tax reliefs, and of course not as many arguments, but where is the fun in that? It all leads me to agree with Lucy that this is a clumsy vehicle to shoehorn sustainability into a storyline. So thank you, Annie, for clarifying that. So we now have it. And another one of the great things about this Dumpty Dum community is we have an expert for everything.
Yeah, free legal advice. Can you get me off my speeding ticket, anyone? I was on roller skates going down the Cowley Road at the time, but still they say I'm liable. Absolute disgrace. Shall we hear from another regular who offers sage, expert, professional advice?
Yes.
Mr. Witherspoon.
Greetings, Robert, Andrew, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. We're approaching the peak of summer in the northeastern United States, which I like, but my British husband doesn't. Go figure. So all three of us are sitting in the air-conditioned living room, and I'm pondering Jim's behavior this week and his short-term flight into health. This psychoanalytic term is often attributed to Freud, but there's no evidence that he coined it. He did develop the theory of and name the term flight into illness. Actually, in terms of analytic theory, Jim exhibited symptoms of flight into illness followed by a flight into health. As I noted last week, his confusion and memory problems, a brief expression of what today we call pseudo-dementia, Freud would have called a flight into illness, quote, an attempt to escape from unacceptable feelings or conflicts by developing neurotic, psychotic, or psychosomatic symptoms, end quote. Then Jim very quickly picked himself up, dusted himself off, went around apologizing to people, and pronounced himself cured. A flight into health, a way to avoid therapy, and a look at the underlying issues causing him stress. But by the end of the week, that neurotic defense was cracking. I don't think he'll be coping well this week. Following what I said last week about Alistair and Fiona, I wasn't surprised when she showed up, feeling shut out from the Jim and Alistair dyad, and looking for some answers. I also want to give some love to Shula here. Without her gentle pushing and support of both Jim and Alistair, none of this would have come to the surface. I like the fact that she's a mixed bag, though I'll never forgive her for lying for Rob when he assaulted the Hunt Disruptor. Ooh. Anyway, you may not hear from me for a couple of weeks. Holiday followed by moving my mom into an independent living place. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. I'm always floored by the technicalities of Witherspoon's explanations of what's going on. It's almost like the people at script writing headquarters know what they're writing about.
Well, they do take a lot of advice, don't they?
Hmm.
So
they don't just have an agricultural advisor. They now have. Do you know? I think maybe Witherspoon is advising them on the sly. Yeah,
I'm sure he'd delighted in having a fee to do that. But
there's something he's not telling us. I tell you.
No, they would have done in the same way that with the Rob and Helen storyline, they took specialist advice. And that helped the way they did the play out of that storyline. They will have done the same here about the impacts of and the effects of abuse and how different people play it out, come to terms with it or bury it. As always, I agree with Witherspoon.
Absolutely.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
And now let's sit back, kick off our manure-encrusted Wellingtons and relax with our veteran social media specialist, Mr. Yokel Bear.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Yokel Bear.
Oh, that didn't work. Hang on.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Yokel Bear here, calling with the social media roundup for the week. We started the week when Dumpty Dummer Dave Richardson asked... I think after Jim's traumatic revelation, most people would have thought to themselves, that explains a lot. I can't help wondering how long the scriptwriters have been holding on to this. Has his hidden abuse always been part of his backstory, or are they looking for a character that will fit the story? Good question, Dave. And Caroline Newnham said, I think it's been factored in for a long time. I think the religious aspect of his abuse situation made Jim the long-term antagonist against Shula's religious belief. Do you know, Catherine, I'm not actually sure that I agree with that. I think Jim's always been a kind of real logical, academic kind of facts-based person. And I think of all the characters to be kind of a real hardcore atheist, I think that's the one the scriptwriters would make the kind of outspoken atheist. So I'm not sure whether it's to do with this current storyline. Faf Ree posted, do you know, it matters not. The script writing is masterly. And yeah, I agree with that as well. I think the writing for Jim has been absolutely brilliant. However, not everyone agreed. Cosmo, our very own Cosmo, posted, it's clear from the BBC website that a new producer has imposed this nonsense on Jim. Retcon of the worst sort. Cosmo, I kind of agree in the fact that if there's a new producer and they've come up with a new storyline, I can understand that. I wouldn't necessarily call it nonsense, though. I think this is an issue, isn't it? There's an issue out there in society. And I think it's just another issue that the Archers are tackling as part of things that are being discussed out there in society, maybe. I don't know. However, our very own Witherspoon asked people, what do you think of the sudden resolution of Jim's trauma? Another case of Archer's miracle cure, or will his symptoms reoccur? Judith Lawrence said, I don't think this is a sudden resolution. Jim has had some momentary relief over his bacon sandwich. Can I just say, I think in many circumstances, a lot of people have had momentary relief over a bacon sandwich. But anyway, what Judith goes on to say, given how well other stories have been covered, dementia, coercive control and so on, subtly overextended periods, why wouldn't this be treated any differently? And yeah, I think a lot of, seeing some stuff on Twitter as well, people were really kind of thinking, well, this is going to be kind of a long road, isn't it? And I think he's going to have good moments and good days, but I wonder what's coming in the future. Ted Curtis agreed with Judith, but said, agreed. Alice's alcoholism, however, ... Yeah, that's the one that's lurking in the background. You know, it's just, we all know she's got a problem. But I guess, Ted, they just haven't got round to it yet. Maybe Christmas. Maybe that's be the Christmas one. However, Paul Morris said, the Grundys are about to explode. Death, prison, shame. Jim may have to go on ice for a while. Yeah, I fear for the Grundys, and this is where I'm going to get all class war later on. I think we're going to go through the working class characters taking a bit of a whipping again, whilst people like Alice are worried about their presentations. But more on that later. Now, Jo Edwards made a point which they said, Jazza needs to wind his neck in. It's not about him or his outrage finding a vent. It's about Jim and his needs. Yeah, I think that's true to a certain extent. But that did lead on to another question that we asked this week, where I posted, I felt some sympathy with Jazza this evening. That was when he shouted at Alice. Yes, it's born out of his anger at what happened to Jim, but Lord knows that needed saying to Alice, or am I just being unfair? And it seems most of you thought I wasn't being unfair. Jane Bushen said, Jazza is by far my favourite character. He can do no wrong. Janice Betson said, I agree with you. Jazza said what needed to be said. Rachel Daniels said, I'm totally biased. Jazza can do no wrong. Whilst Paul Norris says, I was cheering him on. I used to like Alice, but lately she's turning into a Kate clone, which she is. She's like Kate with spreadsheets. But you see a theme emerging there from the comments, which is that basically, to Dumpty Dummers, Jazza can do no wrong. If you disagree, prove me wrong. Now, my comments of the week really do need to go to Kelly Crocovero, who really, a series of comments on this thing about Jazza. And I think her first comment started with just this one sentence, and I think it speaks for the nation. Adam is an insufferable prick. Can we say prick? Oh,
you just did.
Royfield, you might need to edit that out. Kelly goes on to say, that whole scene was me, me, me with Rory. Me, 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 Alice. Me, me, Adam. Just dreadful, really. Can we do a rain dance to bring some shit luck on those idiots and let the underdogs win for a change? Yes, 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 because I have been a cheerleader for the Grundys ever since I've been listening. However, Kelly goes on to, I think this is really insightful, goes on to say, there's been this ever-growing schism between the haves and have-nots. The Archers is more faction-driven now than it ever was. Discussing particularly last night's episode, we concluded that if you are old money or have money in stroke intelligence, you can afford to buy, think, or be guided out of your misery. Elizabeth, probably Jim, but not Will. And Jazza spirals down like a dervish from drama to drama. And the Aldridges are effectively the Gills. There's much talk in the village about this mythological new family who cause drama and rip out kitchen sinks. Yeah, where are the Gills? I mean, Christ, where are the Gills? They came along, they had a party, and there's nothing from them since. But I think what Kelly was saying there about the Grundys, I absolutely agree with. I think we're setting it up that there's lots of things going on that are going to get probably magically cured in the way that it does for the Aldridges and the Archers. But the Grundys, they'll just go from, you know, from crisis to crisis to crisis. And even though, you know, I think Ed's being really, really silly, at the end of the day, doing this toxic waste or toxic chemical run is born out of the fact they're just poor as shit. That's why. So, yeah. Big fan of the Grundys. I really hope they don't come a cropper, but of course they will, because this is a kind of bit of a class-based drama, isn't it, when you think about it? Also as well, talking of Ed and Will and everyone, we asked this week, who were you more happy to hear from, Toby and Rex or William and Ed? Because we had, like, the brothers episode. It was like game of two halves, two sets of brothers. I will say, though, actually, I did agree with Will a little bit about Ed and the chemical run thing, a little bit. Christ, I agreed with Will. I've had to sit down and have a hot, sweet cup of tea for that. Now, the interesting thing about the reply to this is just a lot of love for Rex. Dave Richardson said, let's just have a nice storyline where life works out nice for Rex. Yes, I think so. I think that's... Yeah, Rex deserves something. Alison Brelsford just posted Rex and that emoji with hearts for eyes. Angie Rafter said, Toby and Rex for sure. Will and Ed make me want to punch someone. Restrain yourself, Angie. Claire Taylor said, heart emoji Rex. Just thinking, podcasts are not the best medium for emojis, are they? Anyway. Whereas Drew Hamilton said, I was happiest to hear from Anisha. Yeah. She got married quick, didn't she? Anyway, on that note, that's the end of the social media roundup for the week. And I will talk to you again soon. Bye.
Thanks, Yoko Bear. It looks like we covered most of those topics ourselves, Andrew.
Yep, I think we've done a good one.
Excellent. Right, time for Tweet of the Week.
Right, here we go. A shorter selection this week. Kerry Warbis, Emma, is the coffee table big enough to house a family under? If not, don't buy it. Matt Underwood, I missed yesterday, so don't know what Ed did, but I still think Will is an arse.
True.
A hologram of Jesus, otherwise at Susan S. Harrison. Does Susan have a death calendar? Does Susan have a death calendar so she can remind everyone?
What, when they're going to die?
Reminders of year's minds, I think is what the church calls it.
Oh, you mean with Caroline?
Yes.
Okay, sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, sorry. Right. Moira Walton. I actually really want Lexi's baby to be Roy's and throw a paternity test in that damn bucket list. I liked. And Tweet of the Week, at Exeter Dormouse. Shula. Oh, Caroline, there's so much I want to ask you about how I can support Jim and whatever he's going through, about the calling I think I might have for ordination, about Adam. Can I stop you there, Shula? Caroline's tree is behind you. I'm not a tree. That one really tickled my fancy.
Thank you very much. Now, remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 02-03-031-3105. That's 02-03-031-3105 to leave us a message. You can find Yokel Bear at Dumpty Dum on Twitter. That's at Dumpty Dum. Andrew Horn is at
Andrew Horn UK.
And I can be found at Naked Fingers. And that, folks, is that. Thank you very much, Andrew. That was wonderful.
Okay, and just before we sign off, and I don't know when I'm going to be back, but just to say for those of you who are Patreon supporters, I hope you've been enjoying the special with the actor who plays Alistair that Royfield released this week. And if you're not a Patreon supporter, why not think about doing that so that you can enjoy it too?
Yeah, pop along to Patreon/DumptyDum. And it costs something like a couple of dollars a month, or is it per episode?
A couple of dollars per episode.
Yeah, but you can give more. And why wouldn't you? Because that helps us buy new pink headphone covers so our ears don't hurt when we when we record this. And it keeps me in pens. That's it.
Okay. Lovely to work with you. Bye.
Lovely to work with you. Bye, everyone. Bye.